Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Customer-Led Groove Show, where we discuss and share the best practices and the latest trends in customer marketing, advocacy, and customer-led growth. Today's episode is brought to you by BASE, a pioneer in B2B marketing and the industry's first CLG ecosystem for customer-led marketers, sales, and product professionals. Okay, let's welcome the CLG team and today's guests.
Hi there, Scott Wilder here, and welcome to another episode of Customer-Led Groove, orchestrated by BASE and part of the CLG campus. Today, I'm with Jenny Weigel. Now, Jenny, as you can see, has jenny.com, has her own website, her own business, and Jenny is quite the thought leader and actually advisor to me in a lot of ways for community. Jenny is a strategic consultant, community strategist, just a great person. And previously, she was a senior community strategist at Koros Lithium. So Jenny, welcome.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you. And real quick, let me just let people know, type in jenny.community if you want to learn more about me. Because if you type in jenny.com, you're going to end up on a weight loss site.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
No worries. All good. I mean, I wish I could get jenny.com. That would be incredible for my branding. But jenny.community.
Well, I burn off a lot of calories when I talk about community. So today we're going to talk a little bit about what you do before you launch a community. But before we do that, I should ask you to elaborate a little bit on your journey and how you got here. So tell us.
Oh, the best way to start. Let's say that I started this journey off, particularly in community, so 14 years ago now, and I started with social media communities. So social media management, running a number of accounts for CareerBuilder.com. I was their very first social media manager they'd ever hired. And also under that umbrella was what they considered their communities. And to them, their communities were the audience of these two particular blogs they were running. And I remember thinking, there's so much more we could be doing. This is an engaged audience. This is awesome. But I wonder what more we could be doing with this. And I really did hone a lot of skills at CareerBuilder when it came to the social media world. There weren't that many people with that role yet. So it was pretty neat. And from there, as my career went on, I went to work at different places like Salesforce and eventually at Lithium Technologies, which became Koros. It was at Lithium I was able to narrow my focus and hone my skills in on this community field, this wonderful field that we're part of today, which is a great fit for me. I always thought social media was close to my ideal role, but not quite it, but I couldn't put my finger on it. That's what it was. It just was actually a little too broad for me. I like this more of a focus on peer-to-peer communities. And so here I've been ever since.
So it's funny you mentioned social media. So it might help some people. I often get asked the question, so what's a community person on a branded community versus a community person on social media? Maybe you can just, based on your experience, lay out the differences.
To me, one of the biggest differences was that when I was in charge of social media accounts, my part of my task was to help. There were so many of them that I was kind of the operational person behind it, right? I wasn't necessarily running the individual accounts, but I was working with the team that was. And you know, they were always trying to come up with the most posts that would get views or plays or engagement or whatever with the post. So you have this audience that is following you and you want them to engage with whatever you've just posted. And sometimes they end up talking to each other, but most of the time it's kind of they're engaging with that post and that brand. Now, community managers and community professionals, I think, have the added task of not only being in charge of engaging content, but facilitating the relationships between the community members to make the community stronger. And there are a number of things that have to go into that. And that proves loyalty. And it's one of the things that helps people feel like they really belong. And yeah, there's just so many benefits to that. But it's also an added skill set to, I think, what a social media manager needs to be in charge of or working on a day-to-day basis, because there's so many facets that go into making those connections and ensuring that people are helping one another out and responding to other people's questions. And so that's, to me, that's one of the big differences.
Got it. Before we get into the main topic today, there's another thing that comes to mind. So you worked at Khoros for a long time. Now you're at Jenny.community. Got it right this time. Jenny.community. You have your own gig. I'm just, you know, a lot of people right now are trying to figure out in terms of their careers, do they go back to the company, whether big or small, or do they go out and do their own thing and become a consultant or a contractor? Like, what are some of the pros and cons of that?
I think my friend Jono Bacon said it best when we were on a call a couple of weeks ago. If you don't like the hustle of things, I'm probably taking this not in his exact words. So if you don't really like the hustle of generating your own business, then working for yourself is going to be very challenging. It's going to be daunting, perhaps even. So that's definitely something you should consider if you are thinking about going out on your own and, generating your own leads, filling your own pipeline. These are definitely skills that I myself have never had to flex before. So this has been a learning curve for me in that aspect of my business, but a welcome learning curve. Every facet of learning this business or what it means to run a business has been a welcome learning experience for me. So that's the top thing that comes to mind is just be ready to, you know, be your own cheerleader, your own proponent, your own person you're accountable to. You've got to be it all. And if you're not ready to take on that challenge just yet, that's okay. Then, you know, look for jobs in the corporate world, or if you corporate world's bothering you, look for startups, mid-sized companies, you know, where it doesn't have maybe such of a corporate feel just yet. But definitely do your research and take the time to understand what all goes into running a business before making that decision. I made that mistake many years ago when I tried this another time, and I jumped into it. I left the company I was at, and I just was like, I'm gonna freelance. I did not plan. I did not prepare. I just jumped in, and I couldn't cut it. So I learned from my lessons last time.
Yeah, no, it reminds me of when I had my own consulting business, and I definitely had to make sure that 20-30% of my time was into marketing myself, really, and, you know, building the pipeline, as you said. The other thing that came to mind too is that, think about, you know, working with other people. Like, do you, you know, today we're not in the offices as much. And so, you know, you can do it maybe virtually and feel like you're part of a team. You know, before the COVID hit, I actually used to request that I could sit in a client's office when I was doing work, because I really wanted that team atmosphere and really wanted to, you know, there's so much you hear going on. So, and I think the last thing that comes to mind for me too, is that, you know, how do you scale yourself? Right. So, you know, there's only 10 Jenny hours in a day. So, you know, if you really want to scale your business, then you need to figure out what kind of repeatable products or what kind of repeatable processes and what kind of products you can produce.
Agreed. It can be a lonely world working for yourself, by yourself. That's why I've been making more of an effort lately to try to meet more community professionals in LA. We've got a co-working day set up in February. I've been doing things with a wonderful group here called We Are LA Tech. And that's the way that I get out and have some interaction. And I enjoy working with people and being around people. And that was definitely a little bit of a shift for me when I started this. But there are ways you have to make sure you're just being proactive about scheduling your time to still meet up with other people.
Nice. Yeah. No, that's great. It's great that you found these other communities outside the home, so to speak, outside the home office. So today we're going to talk a little bit about, okay, I'm thinking about launching a community. What do I do? The pre-planning stage. So Jenny, what comes to mind first in terms of things that we should all consider?
Yeah. Wow. So I'm going to take this from the perspective of a company that doesn't have a community. And all of a sudden they heard a success story somewhere and someone is, you know, really excited about this and so forth. So there are definitely some things that you should be doing in the beginning. And one of the very first things is deciding who is going to own this process and it might be in pieces. Someone might own the pre-planning. Someone might own the, you know, the actual strategic process or strategic planning process. Someone might own the implementation piece, but whatever, start to designate that and get your inner community council together, like your internal community council of sorts. And once you know who isn't going to be in charge of what, there are some tasks, I think, to start looking into. The first one, I think, would be to reach out to some customers about this idea, in essence, you know, and you want to reach out to an array of customers, not just the customers who are the dream customers, the best ones, although I definitely recommend talk to them. But reach out to brand new customers, reach out to customers who have been longtime customers, but maybe aren't as engaged in communicating with your company and you'd like them to be a little bit more, you know, think of people who are on all kinds of places on the journey with your company as a customer and spend some time with them and interview them. Sit down. This is that good old stakeholder interview time and spend at least 30 minutes, but I'd say closer to an hour. Give them that personal attention and talk to them about how they like to get information from the company and what more they want from working with the company. Where do they need help? How do they seek help? And you can ask them specifically about a community, but I've also done interviews where you don't. You kind of ask all these questions that beat around the bush a little bit so that you're not explicitly asking about community. And you can still get a good gauge on whether or not people would be interested in online community. You can just ask them where they spend a lot of time, you know, digitally. Are they active on social media? Oh, really? Where do you spend a lot of time on that? What do you post about? And a lot of those things will be indicators to you whether or not someone might be actually active in a brand community of some sort. So yeah, stakeholder interviews. Scott, I bet you've done your fair share of those in your time, huh?
Yeah, well, I really like some things that you said there about, I mean, I liked everything you said, but the array of customers is so key. Like I think many of us, you know, especially in the customer marketing space, we're always focused on the best customers. And, but there's so much to be learning from there's so much to learn from the rising stars. You know, and
yes.
I remember when I was at Google doing their community stuff, we actually had like different tiers of customers or community members. And, you know, we tracked that because we wanted to motivate people to move to the next level if they wanted. Another thing is, I love the fact that you said, you know, yeah, sure, ask them about community, but ask them other things. And so I use you talked about like what else they do or where they go. So I like to use the old school term of what are their watering holes? Where do they go to learn from others as well? And it could be social media, could be certain blogs, following certain people, which, right? So Joe Smith or Sally Smith might be following a certain blogger. They're not active in a community, but that blogger could be a potential speaker or, you know, somebody who can participate in the community. So a lot of that really definitely resonates with me. And yeah, talking to customers and on an ongoing basis is really key. In an earlier podcast, I talked about when I was at Intuit, and I always talk a lot about Intuit. When I first got there, I had one of those offices. And in the hallway, I dragged this huge couch down the hall. And people were like, what are you doing with that couch? And I put it right outside my office, so that every day after work hours, I could listen to customer calls or I could call customers.
Nice. Look at that.
So have a couch. That's my key. So
A cozy couch.
Cozy couch.
I love that, Scott. Even the act of doing that is so inviting, you know, and yeah. So just the way the couch in the office is one thing, but the fact that you brought it out in front I love it. It's saying to people, it's sending a message without putting up a sign. Hey, I'm, you know, I want to talk. I want to listen.
Well, your environment is so important. And, you know, a lot of these companies I worked at, we actually go to people's homes or their offices and see their work environment. But obviously, that's a little harder to do today. But literally, you know, here I am in a little home office. And so I'm thinking work. And so that creates a certain kind of behavior. But if I sit on a couch, then it's more casual, more personable, more human.
Love it. All right. So we just covered that in a few minutes, but it's a big task to undertake. So,
yes.
You know, so I encourage people to spend some time on that. If you're making a to-do list right now of what you want to do,
get a couch.
Yes, that is, get a couch and start, you know, thinking about who you're going to identify for these interviews. I like to talk to anywhere from 10 to 12 people, but it kind of also depends on how big you think this community is going to be. Then again, these interviews are time consuming. So, you know, it's not going to be practical to interview everyone. I don't think, again, depending on the size of your company and the size of the community you're anticipating, but let's see. After that, well, if this is your first time having a community, you don't have to, you know, go to one you've had and look at any analytics or anything, but I don't think you're out of the woods when it comes to online analytics. Like, and what I mean by that is I encourage you to get in touch with the webmaster or whoever's, or the web team, whoever is running the company website, as well as the social team. In fact, any other digital properties that the company has, and ask if you can be privy to reports from the last 6 months. Mainly because what you want to be looking for are some of the trends of how people are interacting online with your company, with your website, with the social channels, if you have a YouTube presence, you know, any of the digital properties you might have. I think that is a good indicator, a good indicator of what people might end up doing on a community. Now, there's plenty of other options of ways people can interact on a community. But if you understand the habits of what people are already doing when they're interacting with your site and your social properties, you're in a much better place to start planning for the community if you understand that. So, you know, if the social team is like, why do you need to see this? What's going on? Just say, hey, I'm just trying to get an idea of how people are interacting with you all. And it could be an indicator of how they would work with the community. Maybe. Don't know. But, you know, what it'd be good to know that information ahead of time. You're being proactive in understanding the behaviors of your customers online. So Scott, did you ever take steps like that before you formed any of the communities in your career?
Very much so. So a few thoughts come to mind. So definitely we talked earlier about the human interaction, but then looking at how people say digitally interact with your company or your product, whether it's on your website, and then understanding what features they use. So definitely a lot of work like that. And I like to tell stories. So another story is when I consulted with Sony, we were selling this device that goes into your room. You know, it's supposed to be in part of like in your bedroom, and you basically, it's a device to look at the internet, basically. So you can access the internet from your bed. Now today everybody has an iPhone, so I'm dating myself. But what was really interesting is when I started looking at how people were using the device, I noticed that they were looking for recipes and cook. And so all of a sudden, that was a certain behavior that I learned about, which we incorporated later on into our community. So in other words, when we started the community, we were seeding the community. We didn't just focus on this is the product, this is how you use it, or things like that. Suddenly, we started talking about cooking and recipes and things I know nothing about. My kids make fun of me that I don't even go near the kitchen. But anyway, so I think, you know, there's a lot you can learn from these kind of, you know, digital channels, and, you know, looking at, you know, what the call center is doing, for example, you know, whether it's looking at mm-hmm. transcripts or looking at the categories they put together. So there's just definitely going beyond just asking people and really looking at, you know, the different places that people interact with your website, your call center, et cetera.
Yes, you reminded me. I usually encourage my clients in this phase to go ahead and reach out to their support team and ask for the top 25 most common reasons people are filing tickets or calling a hotline, or, you know, what do people need support for? That too will give you a good gauge on, again, where the community could help. Cool. All right. Yep. So we've talked about identifying your internal community council. And sometimes that's just one person, right? Community champion. So got to find the people part of it. We've talked about interviewing the ideal community members. And we have also talked about looking at digital metrics from other properties. And I probably should have mentioned this one earlier because this is a huge one. But if you haven't already figured out which company goal the community is going to help fulfill, then definitely need to talk to, you know, an executive or whoever is the community champion or that person's boss or so. Because if you're not tying your strategic planning to a company goal, it's going to be very hard to show how successful community is and how beneficial it is for the company. So that is something I encourage you to do from the very beginning. I've heard objections in the past, like, oh, but you know, I'm 5 years out of college. How am I supposed to go ask about the company goals? Especially if you've been tasked with something like this, but you haven't really been told how, you know, it is going to benefit what the company is working on for that fiscal year, you just got to go get some more information. And it can never hurt to ask. And that's advice I would give anyone at any stage of their career. Can never hurt to ask. So go and ask and see and inquire about how much detail you can get on the company goals, because the community might be looked at as a tactic to fulfill one. But if you know the whole picture, maybe you can, you know, point out how it might benefit this other goal over here. So I know that information is not always, you know, open and available to everyone, but like I said, can't hurt to ask.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. You know, the ROI question is always a question. It's always a challenge to prove ROI. But if you can state, you know, this is how community's goals ladder up to your business goals, then it's going to get you a long way. And then also, I mean, no one is going to criticize you for asking. And, you know, if you are really gun shy, then, you know, either ask your manager to help talk to the C-level or somebody internally who you might look to as a mentor or a champion, et cetera. But laddering up to those business goals is really key.
Exactly. And as you're going to be asking about things, you might as well ask how much budget you're going to have towards this if you haven't been given that number yet. Believe it or not, there are lots of people out there who've been tasked with starting community without being given a budget. So go find that out. It is going to be incredibly important to the steps down the line. And yeah, it's essential to you understanding what you have means to do with, as far as like selecting the platform and, you know, what can you offer your members, programming, swag, all kinds of levels of things. So if you haven't already asked about budget, start talking about that. It's going to become very important as this planning process continues.
In terms of budget, so the platform's obviously going to be one of the big costs there. So I would put in time to look at like the different platforms and what they cost. And so for example, for, you know, we don't have a community platform here at Base, but what we do is a lot of our customers want to say, okay, how does Base work with XYZ community platform? And, you know, I highlight for them the pros and cons, obviously, of the different platforms. But I also highlight like, this is what it could cost. So what I'm saying here really is, you know, do some research and then, you know, you might ask the question of what your budget is, but have in your back pocket, like, here's the low end, here's the medium end, here's the high end in terms of what it could potentially cost. Because a lot of times the C-level is going to be like, you tell me, you know, so tell me what you need. So I think it's really good to kind of go in there and having a sense of what's possible. I'm just to veer off for a second here. When you're thinking about community too, one thing is, think about your potential universe of folks, right? So, you know, when I was at Intuit, millions of people, right? So even if I got 10% of those folks, I'm going to have a pretty good community. But, you know, I can tell you at Base, you know, we have less than 100 customers, right? So even if I got 80%, then, you know, you can say that's, you know, 80 companies and then maybe two or three at each. So, you know, but just think about like, those numbers, and that could also impact how much you're going to spend on the platform. And we can talk a little bit later about like how to get beyond just those customer numbers. So,
Good point. That is an aspect that will come into play a little further into your strategic planning, but it's good to start thinking about it now. At launch, will you be catering just to, you know, customers, or will, and what are the different audiences you'll be catering to? And how, in 2 to 3 years, how big do you expect this community to be? You're right. All important points as you're going to be kind of, you know, bringing all these details to the table. And as much as I do agree with the advice on understanding the cost of these platforms, especially at this point, in this pre-planning point, I have a little bit of a hot take on this. I don't know if every consultant will agree with me on this, but I think that is the limited amount that you need to do with the platforms at that point. Just understand monetarily where they all stand so you can start to paint a picture. And the reason I say that is because I have seen too many community teams, community professionals out there get caught up on one platform and start to create their first community just based off of what that one can and can't do. And in my opinion, they're actually limiting themselves on what is the possible for their community. So my personal method that I work with clients on is we go through the strategic planning process without a platform in mind. And in fact, I don't even recommend to start introducing them to platform representatives until the strategic planning process is very, very, very near the end. Because during this, I want them to think out of the box. I want them to think of the art of the possible. And we're going to incorporate that into your strategic plan. Okay, now what are the chances that then a platform will be able to actually or implement everything on your strategic plan? It's actually like very little, but I've seen many of them be able to get, you know, 95% of that plan done. But what it does then is it's got something to shoot for. You're also giving that platform, you know, feature suggestions and things to do to improve their own offerings and what they're giving people from a technology standpoint. So everyone's kind of got a different process for when they bring the platforms in and how. That's just how I like to do it, because I also think it's just much more fun to have these conversations with my clients, brainstorming the what ifs of anything before they've picked something.
Yeah.
But how do you think of that, Scott?
No, I think that's right. I think that's, you know, think about, you know, this will come out in your interviews and discussions with, you know, customers is what do they want from the platform, you know, or sorry, what do they want? Not from the platform, what do they want from a community or
yes.
a place where they're interacting with others? And then, you know, you can start thinking about the platforms. I think that, you know, my point was just that when you start talking about money, people are going to ask, like, what does it cost? The other thing that comes to mind too is, so you're going to get this like beautiful, like list of things. It's like going to a restaurant and you're going to have this menu of like, of all the different items that you can do on this collaborative platform. And so I would say just as you move forward towards launch and as you move forward in your planning period is really think about how you prioritize these. You know, I think about The Paradox of Choice, another good book. We were talking about books earlier. And, you know, I get overwhelmed when I go to a restaurant and I see like this huge menu. You know, I'd rather see like a few things. And if I want to order something off the menu, I'll do that. You know, especially for your customers, is starting simpler and fewer is better.
Agreed. You make me think of the Cheesecake Factory menu when you think of this, like, whew, wow, there's a lot going on here.
I know. Some of these restaurants, like we have Mel's Diner here. It's like a book. I'm like, I like to read books, but I don't have time to read a book before I eat.
Yes. I want to get into the books because I love that we were talking about that before. But I will say my last suggestion here as we're talking about the whole pre-planning process is to start communicating internally about the community and its benefits and getting people excited about it, hyped up, motivated, because community is a culture change internally as well as for whatever audience you're going to be opening it up to. And you're not going to have people on board overnight. So it has got to be a process. It is going to take time and over time, really do your best to point out the value. I say that, do your best, but there's so much involved in that. That's another episode, Scott.
We'll do a part two. I think we're going to have like a sequel and then a trilogy.
I love it. Yeah. So there is a lot. It takes strong communication skills, really. So to get, maybe you get an internal newsletter going once a week, once a month, whatever it takes to start hyping up community to the entire company. Because even if community is starting out kind of focused on one org of the company, it will end up eventually touching in some way many, many teams, many orgs. So that's my last concrete suggestion on that. You think we got it? I think we got a lot of the pre-planning in there.
We did. And I'm going to recruit you for the sequel and the trilogy. So I want to be sensitive to everybody's time. So I have three last questions. And the next one I know you're going to like. So tell me what you're reading these days, or tell me three or four books that you really like that we can add to the CLG library.
All right. I'll tell you what I'm reading, because if we talked about what I liked, it'd be a longer conversation. I am reading... three things right now, too, and I'm not very good at getting through, but they're all very good. So let me just tell you. Okay. First one is called Setting the Table, and it's a book by Danny Meyer. And he is the restaurateur who created 11 Madison Park, Gramercy Tavern, Shake Shack. You mean, like, this guy has been a genius in the hospitality business.
Shake Shack. Shake Shack is close to my heart. So this is not the place to discuss this, but my mother, like, one of her last requests, I'm serious now, was to go to Shake Shack, was to have a Shake Shack burger and soda.
Well, you should get that word out to Danny Meyer somehow, because I'm sure he'd be touched. I have been very intrigued lately around the idea of how we gather our community members, whether it is virtually or in person. And so his book was all about how he started all these different restaurants, and, you know, restaurants are a gathering place. So there's a lot of great things I have been learning about hospitality, about customer service in general, about management, business, leadership. There's a lot in this. I am 3/4 of the way through and enjoying it much more than I thought I would. All right, that's the first book I'm reading. The second book is still along that theme, though, of wanting to understand more about how we gather and what happens in those gatherings, right? When we bring our community members together. So the second book is one that my friend Tim Courtney recommended to me. It's called The 2-Hour Cocktail Party, and it's by a guy named Nick Gray. And this one is much more tactical. It's because the full title is How to Build Big Relationships with Small Gatherings. And again, he's kind of, he's talking to the person reading almost as if it's their first time hosting a gathering. So I think this would be really beneficial for community professionals to read, especially if you're starting up any kind of meetups with or user groups for your community members. And he is much more tactical than, like, the Danny Meyer book, which is a little bit more philosophical. And I like that he's giving specific suggestions and then giving the why behind it. He is really adamant about name tags, and he talks about why in his book. I'm not going to tell you. You'll have to read it. But I'm really enjoying the 2-Hour Cocktail Party by Nick Gray. And then the last book I'm reading is more for the consulting side of my business. It's called $100 Million Offers, How to Make Offers So Good People Feel Stupid Saying No. And this is by Alex Hormozy. I hope I pronounced that correctly. That I'm just reading because I am trying to improve my own business and how I structure offers. And very intriguing title. It's been a fun read for a business book. So, you know, that's not always the case with some of these. So that's what I'm in the midst of right now.
Awesome. And then there's actually two other questions I like to ask. Usually I ask, is there anything I haven't asked you today that you think I should ask you? So we'll start there. So I know we were talking about, like, you know, the pre-planning stage, but any questions that I didn't ask you, like, damn, Wilder, how come you didn't ask that?
I don't think so. But if I get back to you, we can put that in the, you know, in the next episode or the trilogy. I love the idea of having my own trilogy of sorts, Scott.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for asking it. But we've covered okay. Some very great points today.
And then the last question, which is a little bit similar to the book question, is what or who has influenced your professional career the most? So what could be a website, a book, an experience, and then the who obviously could be a mentor, a manager, mom.
So I'm going to say that my family has actually influenced my career the most, because I think that my extrovert tendencies come from there, and my community gathering passion comes from there. My parents are each one of six kids from their household. And so I grew up with lots of aunts and uncles and cousins. It was fantastic. And somehow my parents' home was the center for so many gatherings. There was always a gathering going on. Weeknights, weekends, for anniversaries, birthdays, holidays. Someone's graduating. Someone is fulfilling a sacrament in the church. Like, we're celebrating it. I mean, we always had people over. We were always gathering for something. And I remember how much care and love my mother would take to, you know, welcoming people in. And no surprise to me that I'm looking to make a career. I have made a career out of this, actually. You know, I'm continuing to make a career. But that is where it all stems from. It stems from those family gatherings. And I really loved when we were all together and there was something shared going on, and we were all sharing in this celebration, in this moment together. And here I am, you know, trying to do that with my clients and their community members. And I love to see it happen. I love to see it. And yeah, that's my inspiration.
No, that's awesome. I can relate. I'm one of six kids too. So six is the magic number. Mm-hmm. Well, Jenny, it's been great today. Any last words before we sign off for now and then wait for the sequel?
I have a tagline, but I don't know if I'm allowed to say a certain word. You know what it
now,
is, Scott. It's on my shirt.
Now is the time for the tagline and the self-promotion and anything else you want to do.
Well, if you want to know more about me, just type jenny.community into your browser. And I love to say to all community professionals out there, go out there and do epic community shit.
I love it. By the way, she has great t-shirts and maybe coffee mugs that says that. So, although I have to put tape off over the word shit because my kids don't like that.
Apologies to parents out there. Still a fun shirt.
Anyway, thank you very much for joining today. So this has been Customer-Led Groove, part of the CLG campus, orchestrated by Base. And like the way I always like to end this is you can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, Alexa, all the different places. Mm-hmm. But don't worry about liking us. Just listen and then play it forward and share it with somebody else. Thank you.
Thank you again for joining Customer-Led Groove. Remember, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on the CLG campus. Feel free to rate us, follow us, and leave a comment on any of those platforms. We hope to see you again soon when we're back in the Customer-Led Groove.